24. My legs hurt, Owen says after we've maintained a rapid pace for 15 minutes. The moment the words have left his mouth, my father scoops him up and carries him without slowing. I forgot how strong he was. That anything could kill him seemed impossible to me then. Because of that, Owen is the least afraid of our group. Boone has sensed our fear, maintaining the pace while wheezing for air. My father holds the shotgun out to Enola. It's too awkward to carry both the weapon and Owen. Know how to use this? She takes the weapon, looks it over. Is it a rifle? Shotgun, he says. Same idea, but for close range. Pull the trigger to shoot. He points at the forestock. And yank that back to chamber a new round. You've got 4 shots. I know how to handle a shotgun, Boone says between gasps. Not a chance, my father and I say in unison. The things sons pick up from their fathers. The rain has faded into a drizzle, but the fog remains, the moisture slowly drifting back into the sky from where it came. I wring out my shirt and slip it back on. The fabric is clinging, but cool. How much further? Owen asks. 20 minutes, I say, thinking it's probably closer to 30. We're close to where the dirt road leading to Synergy's rear gate will be in a few hundred years, but the terrain is unfamiliar. The trees are different. Landmarks are missing. In many ways, it's a new mountain. But up is still up, so we'll get there eventually. When we reach a point where, in my time, the trees had been cut away by the mining operation, I slow my ascent. Not just because the terrain is even more unfamiliar, but because I sense something off. It's a smell, subtle, flowing downhill. Traces of gunmetal and sweat. There are people ahead, and they're afraid. But they're also armed. I duck down behind a tree and don't have to motion for the others to do the same. When I turn around, they've all taken cover. Enola is by my side, shotgun in hand. She scrunches and taps her nose. She smells it too. And then cutting through the forest is a voice, booming, masculine and electronic. Lay down your weapons and surrender, you will not be harmed. When Enola's eyes go wide, I whisper, he's not talking to us. Distant branches crack, grinding under something heavy. I try to get a look, but the forest is thick with trees, which no longer exist in my time, and a lingering curtain of mist. I can't see more than 40 feet, and we're a good 400 feet from the action. The voice is amplified, making its distance hard to peg. That we can smell the people to whom he's talking means they're not too far ahead. If they fall back, we might find ourselves in the middle of a firefight. I turn to the others. If this comes our way, run east along the side of the mountain. Downhill is the most obvious choice for those running away from a fight. If the people above us turn tail, we'd quickly find ourselves in their midst. If I had to guess, I'd say the people in question are Minuteman and his men. I can't think of a good reason for Boone's people to head toward the peak. But the electronic voice is a mystery. There's a megaphone in the security office, but that would sound like a man's voice amplified. This, while masculine, sounds computer-generated. Robotic. The inflections are off. This is your final warning. Lay down your weapons and... Now! A woman's voice. Something about it is familiar, but before I can process it, gunfire erupts. I press myself into the earth and motion for the others to do the same. The gunfire is directed uphill, but it won't be long before the return fire begins, and when it does, every shot that doesn't find a target or a tree will come blazing downhill. Explosions shake the mountainside. Grenades. They're waging an all-out war, and I worry for a moment that the people they're attacking are my security team. My instincts are telling me to charge up the hill, identify the enemy, and help the good guys. But there are 2 problems with that scenario. First, I'm not sure who the good guys are. Minuteman and his people might very well be doing the right thing. That doesn't make my security team evil. They're just doing their job. Second, I'm not about to abandon my family. When the return fire begins, my internal struggle is the first casualty. A rapid-fire stream of bullets tears through the air, buzzing even more loudly than the time flux. It's a minigun, I think, before a cascade of stray bullets nearly tears my hiding place tree in 2. I check on the others to find all but Boone facing down in the dirt. Get down! I hiss at Boone, but he doesn't listen to me. The sound of futuristic combat, coupled with the fact that he's something of a coward, spurs him into frantic retreat. Ignoring my advice, he runs straight downhill, standing tall on the line of fire and heading straight back toward Arthur's dismembered body. Trees crack and splinter under a continued fusillade of hot metal spewed by a weapon with a seemingly endless supply of bullets. Definitely not part of Synergy's security profile. Clouds of bullets filter through the gaps between trees, some of them punching into our cover, the rest zipping further downhill. Three of them find Boone's back. He's launched into the air, sailing through his own blood as the high-velocity rounds exit his body. He sprawls to the ground, a tumble of loose limbs, and slides to a stop. I hear a wet whispered, "I hate this cussed mountain." Then he falls still. I don't need to check him to see if he's dead. Even if he's still clinging to life, there's nothing to be done for him. The bullets stop spraying after a solid 30 seconds of hell. The whine of a spinning down minigun follows. And then, aside from the distant rumble of thunder, silence. No screams. No return fire. No running footsteps. Whoever was fighting on the hill above, they're all dead. The sound of grinding gears and breaking branches keeps us in hiding. Hushed voices follow, not amplified and not afraid. There's 10 minutes of subdued activity, and then it fades, heading uphill. The battle has been won, and the victors are returning from where they came. Synergy. After 5 minutes of silence, I lift my head and look uphill. Trees have been decimated by the firepower, several cut in half. But I see nothing else. That doesn't mean we're alone. The fog is still thick. I'd prefer to wait a while longer, but a howl from below makes the hair on my arms flare to life. The deep, bellowing sound is like no creature I've ever heard. I'm not sure if it sounds angry or hungry. Either way, I don't think we want to be here when it arrives, and I have no doubt it will. Drawn by the sound of battle and the smell of blood carried downhill by the wind, most apex predators will come to inspect, especially if we're in a time when men with guns aren't the dominant hunters. Stay close, I tell my father and Owen as I stand. But not too close. If things go bad, just run. My father wants to argue. He's no coward. But with Owen by his side, he knows where his responsibility lies. Owen, on the other hand, says, "We won't leave you." "Owen," my father says, "we can't." My younger self yanks free from my father. The idea of watching himself die is no doubt incomprehensible. While we're the same person, we're also different people, but that hasn't stopped us from finding an instant rapport and connection, like brothers whose first 11 years of their lives were identical. I crouch in front of myself and hold his shoulders. "I know none of this makes sense. I know it's confusing and scary, but you need to listen to Dad. If I know you're doing that, then I can do what I do without worrying about you. Make sense?"
"You're gonna kick some..."
He glances at our father and then says, with a bit of defiance,
"Ass?"
"Only if I have to." I stand and turn uphill. And I really hope I don't, because I'm pretty sure we wouldn't stand a chance. Despite the howl from below, we make slow progress as we creep toward the peak. While my imagination conjures monsters behind us, I know the real world ahead contains a modern kind of monster. The higher we climb, the greater the destruction, all of it leading to a swath of earth that's been chewed up by bullets, framed by a collection of fallen trees. When I spot the first body, I motion for the others to wait and enter the killing field on my own. There are 4 bodies lying in pools of their own blood. All of them are wearing black masks and high-tech body armor, the likes of which I've never seen. However strong their armor was, they didn't stand a chance against the minigun rounds. 2 of the 4 have missing limbs. The other 2 have softball-sized holes in their torsos. I flinch at the sound of footsteps behind me, but it's just Enola, hatchet in hand, ready for a fight. She's an impressive woman, but like me, she's unprepared for the carnage. She winces and asks,
"What could do this to men?"
"Other men," I say, and I crouch by the nearest body. "Keep watch." She nods and sneaks past the corpses, entering the still pristine forest above. I check the bodies for ID and weapons, finding nothing. Whoever killed these people, who I'm now sure are Minuteman's people, picked the bodies clean. I pull back the mask and stare into the eyes of a man I do not know. In life, I imagine he was intelligent and powerful. A former soldier. I move on to the next 2 bodies, expecting to find Minuteman's face.
but I'm greeted by the blank stares of two more strangers. I pause before withdrawing the last mask. My father is leading Owen past the killing field, covering the boy's eyes as he moves uphill. He frowns when he sees the dead, but then catches my eye, taps on his ear, and points downhill. He has decided to move upward because someone or something is coming up the mountain. Driven by curiosity, I peel back the final mask and am flung backward by shock and horror. I manage to squelch an anguished sob, telling myself it's not real, it's not her. Fighting back tears, I collect myself and crawl back to the body, feeling my professional demeanor slipping away into abject sorrow as I look down into Cassie's dead eyes.